afternoon, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This is Ken, sitting in my Missouri reader seat, reading from the Friday, April 19th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And here is our first piece from the front page. Accompanying it is a large picture of a young lady. It appears that she's speaking to some people in a gym-like setting. And the caption reads, Laura Keener, Autism Services Director at Hills and Dales, gives a tour of the new Weber Autism Center in Dubuque on Thursday. The facility opened to clients in December and a ribbon cutting was held Thursday. And our article is, Autism Center Aids Momentum. While the new Hills and Dales Weber Autism Center certainly provides more space for programming, leaders of the Dubuque nonprofit say it is the details that make it perfect for the population it serves. Dimmable lighting, larger bathroom stalls, and skill-building activities are among facets of the space that are tailored to meet the needs of clients. Hills and Dales celebrated the grand opening of its new autism center with a ribbon-cutting ceremony Thursday, with about 125 people attending to tour the facility. The center, which opened to clients in December, provides a new space for the nonprofit serving people with disabilities to offer its autism services to local children and young adults. It's a testament to the momentum of Hills and Dales and our mission, CEO Jack Mesher said. We're a very restless mission. We're not an agency to settle in, but an agency that's asking what's next for the people who need help, and this is just that phase. The building at 1660 Embassy West Drive offers several rooms where clients can work on skills in a calm environment without distractions. Other rooms feature colorful lighting and comfortable chairs and mats where clients can take breaks. What we're trying to do is, if kids are really struggling and they need a break, just tell us to break instead of that challenging behavior, said Laura Keener, Hills and Dales Autism Services Director. Then they get to come in and chill. The space also offers rooms decked out with skill-building toys and activities where clients learn to share, take turns, and have more social interactions. A kitchen provides space to teach clients independence-building skills. Clients of the Autism Center currently range from ages 2 to 22, so activities vary depending on age. Keener said staff frequently work with older clients on vocational skills and daily living skills to increase their independence. Clients who are required to have an autism diagnosis can spend up to 3 to 4 hours at the center 5 days a week, depending on their needs. Keener said family members of clients have reported great results since operations began in the new space, and having a larger space allows staff to provide the best care possible. I've heard so many things about kids being happy, and when you feel good and you feel safe and you're happy, it reflects in everything, she said. Mesher said the idea for the new facility to house the organization's autism services took root a few years ago when the board of directors recognized the agency needed more space and pursued a plan to expand. The project kicked off with the help of a $1.25 million state grant on top of several local donations and grants. Hills and Dales purchased the building on Embassy West Drive in 2022 and built out the client space. Mesher said the agency now is only $375,000 away from fully funding the project, which cost $3.1 million in total. He said Hills and Dales previously could support 40 clients in its autism services programming, but now has capacity for about 80. The nonprofit currently serves about 60 individuals in the new space. Keener said the program uses applied behavior analysis therapy, which provides individualized methods of support and treatment to increase skills and decrease challenging behavior so clients can function better. The treatment really revolves around finding a lot of things that are reinforcing for them, but working a lot on communication and whatever system works for them. And it's also working on social skills and comprehension of the environment itself, she said. The center is named after Jim and Jane Weber, who were major investors in the project. Jim Weber said at a ribbon-cutting ceremony that they have been involved with Hills and Dales from the beginning of the agency and have seen the need for autism services grow. When the opportunity to assist in this facility came up, we jumped, he said. The DRA also awarded a $100,000 grant to the project. Alex Dixon, president and CEO of Q Casino and DRA, said Hills and Dales not only provides excellent direct care services, but also is a key part of the DRA's mission to grow Dubuque's population. Dixon's connection to Hills and Dales is not just business-related, though. His son, Parker, is autistic and receives treatment at the center. We've lived in communities all across this country, and it's taken us nearly 16 years to find Hills and Dales, and there's no better place that we've found that has the ecosystem, let alone the facility, to provide the services for our son, he said. And our next front page piece, Frampton selected as next UD president. University of Dubuque officials have announced the school's next president. Travis Frampton, who currently serves as provost and vice president for academic affairs at Schriner University in Kerrville, Texas, will assume the role June 1st. He will be the university's 12th president. Frampton, 51, said he is excited to build on what he sees as a tradition of success at UD. The work they've done on that campus, particularly in the last 2.5 decades, is really phenomenal. It's an exceptional example of what can happen in higher education when you get all the people who are responsible for carrying the mission out working together to achieve the same goal, he said. Adding, I'm very invested in continuing that story into the future. Frampton will replace the Reverend Jeffrey Bullock, who has been UD's president since 1998. In March 2023, Bullock announced that he had initiated plans to step away from the presidency. Shortly thereafter, the university established a presidential search committee including Board of Trustee members, administrators, and faculty members, according to Trustee Suzanne Pries, who served as chair of the search committee. Pries said the committee worked with AGB search consultants to find Bullock's successor. The committee interviewed 8 finalists off-site before bringing a few candidates for campus visits and ultimately selecting Frampton. According to Pries, Frampton conducted extensive research on UD before his interview and demonstrated a clear understanding of the university's history and mission. His engaging and approachable personality also was attractive to the committee. He's got the ability to interact with everybody at all levels on campus and make them feel comfortable, Pries said. He will have a fresh perspective on what we will be able to accomplish in the future and how we can grow, and his experiences in his profession just fit right into growing into the position of UD's president. Frampton has held his position at Shriner since July 2019. He also serves as the university's liaison to the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commission on Colleges and the school's Title IX coordinator. He holds a Bachelor of Arts in Religion from Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama, a Master of Arts in Religion from Yale Divinity School in New Haven, Connecticut, and a dual PhD in Philosophy and Religion from Erasmus University, Rotterdam in the Netherlands, and Baylor University in Waco, Texas. Frampton feels his background in the humanities positions him well to lead a university. My discipline is basically the study of interpretation, the idea of interpreting meaning and understanding, he said. To me, the university is a place where you're doing that. Preparing students for getting a job and finding gainful employment is important to what they do at a place like the University of Dubuque, but also there's there to educate their whole person. Prior to his time at Shriner, Frampton spent 19 years at Hardin-Simmons University in Abilene, Texas, beginning as a member of the faculty in the religion department. From 2007 to 2014, he was the director of the university's Master of Arts in Religion program. And beginning in 2014, he served as an associate provost and SACSCOC liaison. Frampton said his experience at Hardin-Simmons dovetails nicely with the culture of higher education in Dubuque, as Abilene also is home to multiple universities. While in Abilene, he learned how to both differentiate his institution when recruiting students and also collaborate with the other colleges to ensure the continued success of all. As a leader, I try to be very relational, solve problems, and collaborate, Frampton said. I don't think I have all the answers to all the questions, so I need to be surrounded by people who are experts in what they do. To that end, Frampton is eager to arrive on UD's campus and begin meeting with faculty, staff, students, and community members. UD had just over 1,900 students in fall 2023. I want to hear what their vision is for the school, the hopes that they have for the University of Dubuque in the next 5 to 10 years, Frampton said. By studying the history of UD, I have listened to the voices of people who are no longer here. Now it's time for me to listen to the voices of people who currently serve the mission of UD. Frampton also plans to work closely with Bullock, who will continue to serve in an on-council capacity for the university after transitioning away from the presidency. Bullock described Frampton as a warm and welcoming person with excellent listening skills and leadership experience that will make him a natural fit for the UD presidency. He added that Frampton is inheriting a campus with updated facilities, a strong endowment, healthy finances, and a committed staff and administrative team. With Travis's vision and expertise and insight, I have all the confidence in the world that the best days are yet to be for the University of Dubuque, Bullock said. Our final front page piece. Sexual assault survivor shares story at Riverview Center. Chanel Miller told a crowd of more than 300 people in Dubuque on Thursday night that survivors of sexual violence respond to their trauma in their own ways and on their own time frames. Each time we hear the graphic details of a sexual assault, it belongs to a person who is a complex being and has an entire life of lived experiences that have shaped their values, who they are, and how they're going to respond, she said. Miller, who survived the 2015 sexual assault by Brock Allen Turner on the Stanford University campus, was the featured speaker at Riverview Center's Evening of Light at Grand River Center in Dubuque. The event is the largest annual fundraiser for the nonprofit, which provides services for individuals affected by sexual violence in 14 Iowa counties and for individuals affected by sexual or domestic violence in 2 counties in Illinois. Turner assaulted Miller outside a fraternity at Stanford in January of 2015. 2 graduate students who were bicycling past observed the assault, restrained Turner, and helped care for Miller until authorities arrived. The following year, Turner was convicted of 3 felony sexual assault charges, for which he received a 6-month prison sentence and 3 years of probation. The sentence sparked nationwide outrage for its perceived leniency, and the judge in the case, Aaron Persky, was recalled by voters in 2018, the first California judge to be recalled in over 80 years. Miller was referred to as Emily Doe in court documents and media reports until September 2019, when she relinquished her anonymity and released the book Know My Name, a memoir. The book won several awards, including the 2019 National Book Critics Circle Award for autobiographies. The compelling thing about Chanel's story is that it's something that happens every day, all the time, said Riverview Center Executive Director Gwen Bramlett-Heckler. She added, "The challenge of making the decision to go public with who she was is something our survivors experience every single day. So many survivors we work with are navigating questions like, when do we tell? Who do we tell? How do we tell? Should we tell?" Miller told attendees she did not want to relinquish her anonymity during the trial or immediately after it. When she shared her story as Emily Doe in court, she said it was received by those present with irritation or disdain. However, when she began speaking publicly at events like the one Thursday night, she was struck by the respectful and warm response she encountered to the same story, showing her the importance of the context in which a story is told. If you have been through something and you're carrying a story that feels really dark or really prickly, and you reveal it to someone and they shut you out as a result, the context in which you have told the story has failed you, she said. What you need to do is go out and find another context. We should all be equipping ourselves to be the receivers of these stories when survivors are courageous enough to tell them. As her case caught national attention, Miller said she was unnerved by the way those defending Turner used positive anecdotes, such as his job as a lifeguard, to insinuate that he could not have assaulted her. "I wasn't trying to negate any of the good qualities that people saw in him, because that is their truth," she said. "My truth is that this person reacted to me completely differently, and you need to be able to respect that and hold that reality too." Miller noted that although much was made of the perceived leniency of Turner's sentence, a harsh punishment was not what she had been fighting for. "What I wanted more than anything in the world was acknowledgement of what had happened and a promise that he would not do that again," she said. "I never got either of those things." Miller also said that instead of questioning a survivor about how they ended up in the situation that led to their attack, society should refrain from normalizing sexual violence and focus on creating structures of support for survivors. "Anytime you ask a survivor why they didn't say something, then it becomes an individual problem rather than a societal problem," she said. "I encourage us to zoom out and say, why wasn't there someone in proximity that she felt like she could go to. The only reason I came forward was because I finally thought I had enough resources, support, and security to make that decision. Ahead of the event, attendees Pamela Thorpe of Dubuque and Lois Dietzel of Dickeyville, Wisconsin, both were looking forward to hearing Miller's story. Dietzel, a nurse at University of Wisconsin-Platteville, said Miller's story is all too relevant for many of the students she works with. Her book really hit home with what I see in the college students, she said. I just wanted to come and support her and support an organization that does such great work. And now we'll turn to a bit of our Dubuque and Tri-State news. And heading up that page, we have farm retailer in Platteville reopens after September fire. And with it, we have an accompanying picture of a smiling young man standing in front of a sign that says Vondra Ag Services. And the caption reads, owner Brady Vondra stands at the front counter of Vondra Ag Services in Platteville. Brady Vondra promised he would rebuild the home of his business by spring, and he did. Vondra Ag Services in Platteville reopened this month after a fire last year left his old building a total loss. The farm retailer, located at 7200 Wisconsin 81, provides crop protection products, fertilizers, seeds, and other agricultural items. Vondra, who grew up on a family farm, founded the business in 2016. He started the business in one of his father's farm buildings before later opening his original facility. I really had a passion for helping farmers be successful, Vondra said. With five full-time employees, the business grew and became an important part of the agricultural industry in southwest Wisconsin. But Vondra suffered a major setback last fall. On the morning of September 17th, Vondra got a call that smoke was coming from his building. Within 10 or 15 minutes of arriving, the building was fully engulfed in flames, he said. Several nearby fire departments responded to the blaze, but the building was a total loss. Obviously, there were some really dark times initially, he said. It was pretty tough not knowing what to do or which direction we're heading. Although the fire was devastating, Vondra got right back to work, temporarily renting a warehouse to resume operations. Meanwhile, the community rallied to help Vondra rebuild. We partnered with a lot of small businesses that are like mine, he said. I knew that working one-on-one with independent small business owners, we'd get the job done and taken care of in a timely fashion. Sylvester Imhoff of Countryside Builders was one of several contractors that participated in the rebuild. Imhoff had worked with Vondra on his business's previous building. We're good friends, Imhoff said. I was happy to help Brady out. Imhoff said the relatively mild weather made it easier to get the project done within Vondra's desired timeline. The mild winter that we had played a big part in it, Imhoff said. We weren't battling weather conditions or anything. Vondra also got help from State Senator Howard Marklin, Republican Spring Green. Marklin, who also grew up on a farm, reached out to the state's Department of Safety and Professional Services on Vondra's behalf to expedite approval of the rebuilding plan. In a situation like he went through, time is money, Marklin said. You want to get up and running as soon as possible. We wanted to make sure that the government was being responsive to his needs. Vondra's newly rebuilt facility has two buildings, a seed warehouse and another building for crop protection products and fertilizers. He said he hopes to continue growing his business and to keep up with the technological advancements in the industry. Really, the goal is to continue to help farmers be successful, he said. Now we'll turn a bit to our opinion page and our view. the quick takes that represent the point of view of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald editorial board. And today, we have three smiley faces. Number one, a local group helping Dubuque's immigrant communities thrive is making strides on efforts critical to the tri-state area. Members of the Better Together Committee, founded by Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque, said at a recent forum that efforts are progressing to address key obstacles that immigrants face locally, such as obtaining and retaining jobs, medical translation, employment for international students, and navigating the healthcare system. After identifying challenges that local employers face in hiring and retaining staff who are immigrants, a subcommittee is now looking into making cultural competency and language resources accessible for employers, holding an employer summit, and building stronger connections between community members and employers. Other efforts include keeping international students local after graduation and getting 40 community members certified as medical translators, 20 in Spanish and 20 in Marshallese. It's good to see community members rallying around such important work. Dubuque prides itself on being a place that is welcoming to people of all backgrounds, and finding better ways to serve our local immigrant community is just one piece of that puzzle. Those efforts have a practical benefit as well. Many local and statewide economic experts say immigration is key to filling workforce gaps amid ongoing labor shortages. Our thanks go to the Better Together Committee for working to make the Dubuque area a more welcoming place for all. Our next smiley face. A recently launched City of Dubuque program hopefully will aid local efforts to make housing accessible to all residents. The city recently launched its Security Deposit Assistance Program, which provides financial assistance covering the equivalent of up to 2 months' rent for the deposit. Households earning 50% of the area's median income or lower are eligible to participate. The funds are awarded on a first-come, first-served basis, with priority given to those who are homeless or at risk of homelessness. The city-administered program is funded by a $50,000 Iowa Finance Authority grant and $25,000 from Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque. Dubuque Housing and Community Development Director Alexis Steger told the Telegraph Herald that city officials identified security deposit assistance as a priority after receiving feedback that Housing Choice voucher applicants were not able to come up with funds to pay for a deposit. A chorus of local leaders likewise said that for those in need of housing, coming up with the money for a security deposit can be a significant challenge. City of Dubuque leaders recently have put a focus on developing all types of housing in the community. Ensuring the city has enough housing means both creating additional places for people to live and making sure all of Dubuque's residents can access homes across income levels. Kudos to the City of Dubuque for turning resident feedback into a program serving some of our residents most in need, and to Iowa Finance Authority and the Community Foundation for helping make it happen. Our final smiley face. A salute goes out to a new local nonprofit for its support of women veterans. Tri-State Women Warriors began meeting regularly in 2022 and recently obtained nonprofit status. Members gather monthly to discuss issues facing women during and after their military service, and the group also hosts social, volunteer, and advocacy-focused events. The area has a strong network of resources available to serve local veterans. Tri-State Women Warriors serves as a complement to those organizations by addressing the needs specific to the area's women veterans, a group that quickly is growing at a national scale. Veterans, regardless of gender, are at a much higher risk of suicide than the general public. But data from disabled American veterans shows women veterans are twice as likely to attempt suicide as their male counterparts. That suicide risk wanes, however, when women have a strong support system and sense of community connection. Two things Tri-State Women Warriors looks to offer members alongside referrals and connections to other area resources. According to U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, women are the fastest growing group in the U.S. veteran population. That means groups such as Tri-State Women Warriors only will become more important in serving the women who have served our nation. May the group's already strong start see continued success. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DUPACO and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. This is Ken, and I have been and will continue reading from the Friday, April 19th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we now will turn to today's obituaries. Doris J. Bierman, Epworth. Doris J. Bierman, aged 89, passed away April 15th at her home in Epworth. Friends and relatives of Doris may call from 2 to 7 p.m. Saturday, April 21st at the Rife Funeral Home in Epworth, where a prayer service will be held at 1:30 p.m. Visitation will continue after 9 a.m. on Monday, April 22nd at the funeral home. Services for Doris will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, April 22nd at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Epworth, with Reverend Michael Schuler presiding. Burial will be held in the church cemetery. Doris was born August 23rd, 1934, in Luxembourg, Iowa, to Bernard Tapke Sr. and Hilda Lewick Tapke. She was the youngest of three children. She was a 1953 graduate of St. Mary's High School in Guttenberg. After high school, she worked as a bookkeeper for Foxen Plumbing in Luxembourg and a child care giver for a number of families in Luxembourg, New Vienna, and Dyersville. She worked with her husband to manage excavating and construction businesses. Later, she worked for Julian Care in Dubuque, where she loved interacting with the residents and staff. She married David J. Bierman of Epworth on September 5, 1964, at Holy Trinity Church in Luxembourg, and moved to Epworth in 1964. She was a member of St. Patrick's Altar and Rosary Society and loved to sing in church. Doris enjoyed gardening, feeding her family and friends, and canning. She loved trying new recipes and won many local recipe contests. She also enjoyed exercise classes with her friends, garage sales, puzzles, card and board games, books, and crocheting beautiful doilies. She had an ability to engage many people in conversation. She loved her dog and cat companions and was an animal whisperer. Doris always had a smile for others. A video tribute may be viewed and online condolences sent to the family at www.rifefuneralhomeinc.com. Sarah A. Shower Rickey, Austin, Texas. Sarah Ann Shower Rickey, 49, of Austin and formerly of Dubuque, died Tuesday, October 31st, 2023. Graveside services will be held at 11:30 a.m. Saturday, April 20th at Linwood Cemetery. She was born on February 13th, 1974, to Dorrance and Shirley Shower in Dubuque and graduated from Wallert in 1992. In 2002, she received a B.A. from Clark College. She is survived by her sister Anne and others. Terry M. Gross. Terry M. Gross, 70, of Dubuque, died Thursday, April 18th. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Sunday, April 21st at St. Anthony's Catholic Church, where a massive Christian burial will take place at 10:30 a.m. Monday, April 22nd. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, is assisting the family. Jerome J. Welsh, 64, of Dubuque, died Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Monday, April 22nd at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, where services will follow. And we do have several births, so we welcome to the community these new ones, all of them on Wednesday, April 17th. Magdaleno, Ricardo and Anne Assi Magdaleno of Asbury, a girl at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. Looning Waters, William Looning and Brittany Waters of Benton, Wisconsin, a girl at Southwest Health, Platteville. Powers Sperling, Jonathan Powers and Rachel Sperling of Dubuque, a girl at Unity Point Health, Finley Hospital, Dubuque. Welcome, new ones. May your life be blessed. We have one other piece of tri-state news before we get to our brief news, and it is Cascade Club, off and running. And it's accompanied with a picture of a lot of young kids just running around a grassy area with a caption that says, "The Cascade Cougars Running Club held its first meeting April 10th with kids from multiple grade levels racing a one-mile distance around the lower field of Cascade Elementary School. The runner's finale will be held Friday, May 10th. Students at Cascade Elementary are running a half marathon over the next 4 weeks as part of the newly formed Cascade Cougars Running Club. The club was formed by the school's instructional coach, Amber Gravel, who said she wanted to provide an opportunity for students to improve their physical fitness in a free, supportive environment. "I used to coach track among multiple sports, and with kids, I haven't been able to coach as much as I wanted to," Gravel said. "I wanted to give all kids at Cascade Elementary a free option to be a part of this club and build a community where they're running and cheering each other on with kids from all different grade levels." According to Gravel, the initial plan was to start the club for the next school year, but with support snowballing in 3 weeks since she first suggested the idea to the school's parent-teacher association or organization, in March, the running club was launched this spring instead. A large part of the support came from multiple local businesses sponsoring the club, either by donating funds for shirts or by contributing post-run snacks like water and bananas. "I reached out to donors who I'd really love to thank. They are providing a free t-shirt for every runner," Gravel said. The running club meets every Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning at 7:35 a.m. The first meeting was held April 10th and will be followed by 12 more. Each morning, the students will run approximately 1 mile, with the goal of reaching 13.1 miles or a half marathon by the end. The finale will be held Friday, May 10th, with family, friends, and anyone who wants to cheer on the student runners encouraged to attend. Afterward, all runners will be awarded medals and shirts for participating. While the club was originally intended for all students in kindergarten through fifth grade, limited space for the kids to run at the school's lower field meant limiting it to second through fifth grades. A total of 61 runners signed up. "At first, they were nervous, but they were very excited, which made me feel like it was all worth it," Gravel said. Now we'll turn to our news in brief. Dubuque man gets 2 years in prison for raising children in unsafe conditions. A Dubuque man has been sentenced to 2 years in prison after police found unsafe conditions in the home where his infant died. Khalil A. Holloway, 24, recently received the sentence in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to two counts of child endangerment. Per a plea deal approved by Iowa District Associate Judge Robert Richter, a third child endangerment charge was dismissed. Court documents state that Holloway lived with Vanessa T. Matlock, 24, who was arrested January 17th on a warrant charging child endangerment leading to death, neglect or abandonment of a dependent person, and two counts of child endangerment. Her case is ongoing. Holloway and Matlock have two mutual children, and Matlock has another child who also lived in the couple's apartment. Court documents state that the couple's two-month-old was found unresponsive June 10th at the family's residence and subsequently was pronounced dead that day at Unity Point Health Findlay Hospital. Documents state that the overall condition of the couple's home was poor, and police also found signs of marijuana use within the apartment. Holloway told police he smoked marijuana while in the apartment and claimed ownership of drug paraphernalia, documents state. The investigation shows that the living conditions of the apartment were not adequate for any of the children living there, documents state. Man sentenced to 180 days in jail for inappropriate conduct with a minor. A Dubuque man has been sentenced to 180 days in jail for inappropriately touching a minor. Brandon A. Barrios, 38, recently received the sentence in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to one count of lascivious conduct with a minor. Per a plea deal approved by Iowa District Court Judge Monica Zerini-Ackley, additional charges of enticing a minor and assault with intent to commit sexual abuse were dismissed. Court documents state that Barrios inappropriately touched a girl under the age of 16 at a Dubuque residence in June. The girl reported the incident to her mother, who knew Barrios and subsequently contacted police. The girl's mother told police she confronted Barrios about the incident and that he did not deny the interaction occurred, documents state. East Dubuque to host services parade on Memorial Day weekend. East Dubuque veterans groups plan a series of events to mark Memorial Day. The East Dubuque Memorial Day parade will be held beginning at 9:30 a.m. on May 27th. The parade will line up at 9 a.m. on Wall Street. Military services will follow the parade at East Dubuque Cemetery on Hill Street. Nativity BVM Church in Menominee is scheduled to hold cemetery services following the 9 a.m. Mass on May 26th. East Dubuque American Legion Post 787, East Dubuque Drum and Bugle Corps, Galena Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 2665, Galena American Legion Post 193, and the Galena Generals will participate. American Legion Post 787 will sell poppies from 2 to 6 p.m. May 24th and 25th at Fidelity Bank, Van's Liquor Store, and Family Beer and Liquor. Sales will also occur from 8 a.m. to noon on May 25th at Van's Liquor Store. Keystone, Central Rivers AEAs to share chief administrator. The chief administrator of a local area education agency also will lead another Iowa AEA through a pending sharing agreement. The Keystone AEA Board of Directors approved sharing chief administrator Stan Reingens as an interim chief administrator with Central Rivers AEA pending mutual agreement of details of the sharing agreement, a press release states. The release states that the agreement would run from July 1, 2024 to June 30, 2025. Central Rivers AEA recently named Reingens as its interim chief administrator after Joel Pedersen announced his resignation to become president of North Iowa Area Community College. According to the release, Keystone and Central Rivers will share two executive leadership positions for 2024-25, in addition to the chief administrator role. Both agencies are working closely with area school districts in planning services in light of significant shifts brought about by current legislation, the release states. Governor Kim Reynolds last month signed into law a bill overhauling the state's AEAs, which provide programs and services such as special education, professional development, and educational materials for school districts. The law shifts the current funding mechanism for AEAs, particularly as it relates to funding for educational materials and media services, and establishes a task force to study AEA effectiveness. Local dairies in Iowa receive state grants. Multiple local dairies in Iowa recently received state innovation grants. A press release states that 20 Iowa dairies across 12 counties were awarded Choose Iowa Dairy Innovation Grants to increase on-farm dairy processing, incorporate labor-saving technology, and expand the availability of Iowa dairy products. Grant recipients were required to be located in Iowa, have fewer than 50 employees, and be in good standing with pertinent regulatory agencies. The following local dairies received grants through the program: Anderegg Farms, Guttenberg, $77,184.31 for an automated takeoff system. Kenneth Steffen Dairy, New Vienna, $100,000 for a new milking parlor equipment, and milk room equipment. Cruz Dairy, Dyersville, $57,654 for an ear tag-based cow monitoring system. Lango Dairy, Hopkinton, $26,575 for a milk taxi and Alta cow watch activity system. Lehman Dairy, Cheryl, $22,063 for an ear tag-based cow monitoring system. Strife Farms, Farley, $20,047 for feed, watch, and rumination collars. Wolf Dairy, Epworth, $11,125 for a cow health monitoring system. Celebration plan for Ulysses S. Grant from Galena. A birthday celebration for a Civil War general and president with a local connection will take place in Galena this weekend. Events today and Saturday, April 20th, will honor former President and General Ulysses S. Grant, who lived in Galena prior to the Civil War and returned for occasional visits in the years after the war and his ascension to the presidency. Lamplight tours will be held from 5 to 6 p.m. today at the U.S. Grant Home State Historic Site, 500 Boutillier Street, led by Galena Historical Group Women of Courage and Commitment. The Galena Generals also will be present. On Saturday, the Galena and U.S. Grant Museum, 211 South Bench Street, will offer free admission and treats from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Dubuque Area Heart Walk planned. A fundraising event for the American Heart Association will be held next month in Dubuque. The Dubuque Area Heart Walk will take place at 9 a.m. May 4th, at Dubuque Arboretum and Botanical Gardens, 3800 Arboretum Drive, according to an online announcement. Check-in for the event begins at 8 a.m. The event raises money to support research addressing America's number one and number five leading causes of death, heart disease and stroke, respectively. Visit DubuqueAHeartWalk.org for more information, including how to register. That was DubuqueIAHeartWalk.org. Conservation Foundation to host frog-related walk in Illinois from Galena. Joe Davies Conservation Foundation will host a free walk to find and catch frogs. The annual frog walk will take place at 6 p.m. Friday, April 26th on the Galena River Trail, according to a press release. Attendees will meet at the Meeker Street footbridge in downtown Galena and walk down the trail toward Mueller Reserve. Staff will lead the walk and help attendees identify frogs that they catch and will have tadpoles for viewing. The walk is a catch-and-release event. The event is free and the public is invited to attend but is reminded to dress for the weather. In case of rain, the event will be rescheduled to May 3rd. One hurt in Illinois crash from Galena. Authorities said one person was injured in a crash involving a semi-tractor trailer in Joe Davies County. Pamela A. Patch, 54, of Racine, Wisconsin, was transported by ambulance to Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center for treatment of non-life-threatening injuries, according to the Joe Davies County Sheriff's Department. A press release states that Patch was stopped on the east shoulder of US 20 at Illinois 84 at 12:35 p.m. Wednesday when she attempted to make a U-turn on US 20. Patch's vehicle collided with an eastbound semi operated by Joshua A. Hill, 43, of Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. Patch was cited with making an improper U-turn. Authorities continue to investigate the crash. Fenimore starts water pipe survey. From Fenimore. The city of Fenimore is surveying residents about their water pipes. The survey is part of an effort to monitor and replace lead service lines in compliance with federal regulations, according to an online announcement. The survey is online at tinyurl.com/Fenimore Water. Call 608-822-6110 for more information. Asbury plans hydrant flushing. From Asbury, the city of Asbury will flush hydrants during this month and next. Flushing will occur April 23rd to May 24th, according to a press release. Water will remain safe to consume during flushing, but residents should use caution when doing laundry to prevent stain. Call 563-556-7106 for more information. And now we have our weekend buzz, the noteworthy things to do this weekend. First one, As Time Goes By, cabaret show. Today, Hotel Julian Dubuque, 200 Main Street. 7:30 p.m., Kathy Goodman's AI-inspired show has a new showtime for tonight. Admission, $25 per person. Tickets for this event are available at tinyurl.com/xuwyt2h9, or better, at the door. Today, Girls Night, the musical, Five Flags, 7:30 p.m. The Jukebox musical comedy comes to Five Flags. Tickets start at $32 per person plus fees. Tickets and more information about this event, tinyurl.com/Five Flags Girls Night. Get Home Dancer, People of Salmon Tishmian. I'm sorry, I mispronounced that. Today, John and Alice Butler Hall, 2255 Bennett, 7:30 p.m. Dancers and performers from the Tishmia tribe of Metalaska, Alaska, showcase hand-carved masks, authentic skin and wood drums, and colorful handmade regalia while educating about the tribe's way of life that was once forbidden. Admission $20 to $29 plus fees. Tickets and more information about the event, tinyurl.com/Heritage Center Salmon. Grant's birthday celebration today and Saturday at Grant's home. 5 to 6 p.m. today and 10 a.m. to 4:30 Saturday. Tonight, the Women of Courage and Commitment will give candlelight tours of the historic Grant home, coupled with a visit by the Galena Generals. Celebration continues with free admission to the Galena and U.S. Grant Museum on Saturday. Heritage Pond Fish Stocking and Fun Day. Saturday, Heritage Trail Pond, 12033 Rupp Hollow Road. 10 a.m. to noon, Dubuque County Conservation and Iowa DNR will have a free-use fishing pole, bait, and tackle available on a first-come, first-served basis, as well as other activities, games, and resources. Registration is not required. Party for the Planet, Saturday, National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Southwest Tech Sustainable Energy Management Program presents this year's Party for the Planet, an Association of Zoos and Aquariums event. In addition to special events and demonstrations, vendor and information booths will be available around the museum campus. Bring in a canned food item for the museum's food drive for the Dubuque Food Pantry and receive $5 off of total admission fee. General admission starting prices $24.95 for adults, $18.95 for ages 3 to 17, $22.95 for ages 65 and over. Tickets are available at the door at www.rivermuseum.org/buy-tickets. tickets. Free Fallen, the Tom Petty Concert Experience, Saturday, Five Flags Theater, 405 Main. 8 p.m., Free Fallen, the Tom Perry and the Heartbreakers Tribute Band, has been performing internationally for the past 16 years. Ticket prices start at $19 per person plus fees. Tickets and information are available at tinyurl.com/5flagsfreefallen. Ultimate Doors, Saturday, Mississippi Moon Bar, 8 p.m., authentic reproductions of Jim Morrison and the Doors music. Equipment and even outfits are among the highlights of the Ultimate Doors tribute. Must be 21 and over to attend. Admission is free. More information, tinyurl.com/moonbarultimatedoors. Beauty and the Beast, Saturday, John and Alice Butler Hall. Doors open at 12:30 p.m. The Heritage Center hosts Ponto Company USA's production of Beauty and the Beast for its superlative season. Dubuque County Library System will offer a page-to-stage educational activity in conjunction with the performance. General admission, $29 for adults, $19 for children. Tickets and more information about this event, tinyurl.com/heritagecenterbeauty-beast. And that wraps it up for us, ladies and gentlemen, and anyone else who may be listening. This has been IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, with me, Ken, down here in Missouri, but reading from the Friday, April 19th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. I'll be back again next Friday, but in between now and then, learn that there's a lot more than the Monday through Friday newspapers that you hear. Tune in to all kinds of programming on IRIS. I am certain you can find many, many enjoyable things to listen to as you relax. So until next week, take care of yourselves, be kind to each other, and do a kindness for another person. So long, until next week.